to get dickheads in any society.
I never said that I thought it would be bad.
Are you high now?
Yeah.
Hello, Tom Tilley with you for Hack. Have you ever seen rubbish in the ocean and just wanted to find a way to clean it up? Well, you're about to meet a 22-year-old Dutch inventor with a big idea.
I think I can only be truly satisfied once the ocean is clean again.
Will his plan work? We'll find out in just a moment.
I don't know. A lot of people who would move out at my age, they would probably have parents.
It was pretty much you're 18 now, you no longer have to be in care. Pack your stuff and leave.
On Triple J.
Do you have a flatmate that goes by the name of Mum or Dad? Well, 42% of Triple J listeners surveyed this year live at home. And I'm sure it's not everyone's ideal situation, but it is great to have the option, right? I mean, could you imagine life without parents to fall back on? For young Australians who don't have parents and live in state care, life can be pretty tough. And one of the hardest moments is when they turn 18. At that point, suddenly they're left to fend for themselves. And of the 2,000 that get too old for state care every year, half end up unemployed, homeless, in jail, or having children within a year of turning 18. That's 1,000 of them ending up unemployed, homeless, in jail, or having children within a year. So, what needs to change so that these young people have a better chance? James Patil has the story.
I'm Alex. I'm 21. And I was in docks for 6 years. Within that 6 years, I moved 28 different placements. Fell pregnant at 16, had my child at 17, and by the time I turned 18, I was pretty much told to leave. So I was on the streets with my child for a good year.
We're in a park in Western Sydney, right near Alex's house, and Alex has a bunch of lip piercings and crazy peroxide hair. Can you tell me a bit about the badges that you're wearing?
There's Slayer, you've got My Chemical Romance.
Can you remember what you were doing when you turned 18, or what you hope you will be doing? At 17, Alex had a baby, and at 18, they suddenly became homeless.
It was pretty much you're 18 now, you no longer have to be in care. Pack your stuff and leave.
Was it your 18th birthday?
Yeah. And the worst thing was is that I'd actually gotten in an argument with my girlfriend at the time, and she'd punched me in the face. And people, you know, they celebrate their 18th because, you know, they're now legal, they're able to drink and all that. But me, it was more of a, I'm 18, I just got punched in the face and now I have to leave. I didn't know where to go, I didn't know what to do. And it got me really scared. And yeah, it was pretty hard. It was really hard.
Every year, about 2,000 Australians turn 18 and leave out-of-home state care, meaning they're no longer the responsibility of the government. They're on their own. Anglicare estimates that within 12 months, about half of them are unemployed, in jail, or have become a parent themselves. Growing up in foster care is also a pipeline to being homeless. And homeless doesn't only mean sleeping on the street, it's defined as a week without appropriate accommodation, like long-term couch surfing. So where did you stay first?
I stayed at my parents' house, and then from there, I pretty much couch hopped with all my friends.
What was your biggest fear?
I wanted him to look at his mum and be proud, rather than, you know, sad and disappointed that I couldn't give him the life that he could have.
So young people need to have a plan.
That's Dr. Joseph McDowell, a director at Create Foundation. They're a national organisation for children who have been or are in state care.
Because when you leave care, you may have to leave your placement, your environment, so you've got to find somewhere else to live. You've got to know how you're going to support yourself. You're going to have to think about, are you going to continue your education? There are a whole lot of issues that are happening at that point in time.
CREATE has found about two-thirds of young people who are in state care fall off the radar when they turn 18.
It was 64% of the young people who could not be found. These young people were in care and they were on court orders. So at that stage, the government or the agencies are responsible for their care. But when they turn 18, the orders cease, and so nobody is responsible for those young people thereafter. So you've got a situation where these young people are now really in limbo because they've been taken from their birth families into care for their protection, and they can't go back to their birth families. Where do they go?
So could we say that every year about 2,000 young people leave state care and over 1,000 of those. We don't actually know where they go.
Yes, that would be right. Once they leave care, they're uncontactable.
Dr. Joseph McDowell, speaking to James Patil. On the text line, I'm currently doing a placement for uni in an adult inpatient mental health unit, and a vast majority of the people I'm seeing come through have been brought up in state care. It has lifelong consequences that people just aren't realising. It's horrible. If you've lived in state care, I would love to hear from you. Did you struggle when you hit 18? What was that moment like? Give me a call. 1300 055 36. 1300 055 36. As we just heard in James's story, more than 1,000 18-year-olds who leave state care each year drop off the radar. So where do they end up going? Let's get back to the story.
Carlatina.
Hi. Hello. I'm Carlatina. I am 21 years old and I'm a nanny.
Carlatina grew up in foster care in Tasmania, and despite the support of her foster mum, she became homeless at 18.
And I got my first place, I signed a lease, and because Tilla didn't come, I didn't have any furniture for 4 months.
Tilla stands for Transition to Independent Living Allowance. The government pays up to $1,500 to help young people cover the costs as they leave out-of-home care. But Tilla took months to arrive before Carlatina could buy a bed and a desk and other furniture.
The damage had already been done. I had fallen really behind in my school, had to leave a work placement. I lost my job because I wasn't focused, and I was settled by July, but then my house flooded and I didn't know where to go to, where to fix those things. So I just let it be, and eventually made me really, really sick.
Hang on, your house flooded?
Yeah, I didn't know what to do because I just never got taught what to do in these situations, and I didn't know how to deal with my landlord. Yeah, I don't know. I was just very naive. I ended up being homeless because my neighbours were involved in gun violence and they did a lot of drugs. Like, I heard, like, threats and shooting. I got ready for school, called a taxi to a 24-hour McDonald's. I stayed there until I caught a bus to school, and I knew my school had a accommodation, so I stayed there for a couple of nights because I was so scared to go home.
You know, like, Carlatina, people move out of home all the time. How do you think your story is different?
I don't know. A lot of people who would move out at my age, they would probably have parents, and, like, if they have issues and they need to move out again back with their family, and I've known people who have moved back with their family, whereas there are a lot of foster kids who, like, especially, like, residential care, where they can't go back there. Well, the minute they turn 18, they get kicked out. So
young people in care are meant to work with a caseworker and to come up with a plan for when they turn 18 and leave. It covers things like where they'll live and how they'll earn money. Carlatina says she never had a leaving care plan. In fact, CREATE says the majority of young people leaving care don't have a plan, and others know they have one, but they haven't seen it.
To this day, I still have not seen my leaving care plan.
Okay, so has it been very useful?
I wouldn't know. Because I've never seen it, so...
The New South Wales Upper House recently held an inquiry into child protection, including whether there are enough caseworkers in the state. It still has to make its recommendations, but I've spoken with caseworkers who say there's definitely not enough. The number of children in out-of-home care in New South Wales has gone up by almost a third in the last 6 years. Well, the number of caseworkers has been pretty stable. It's actually gone down a tiny bit. Caseworkers say they just don't have enough time. One of their jobs is to investigate reports a child is at risk of significant harm. And for at least the last decade, they've been buried in work. They just haven't been able to keep up with these reports. There's more than 100,000 of these reports every year. In 2012, about 40% of these reports were never properly assessed. That same year, caseworkers were only able to meet up with the children named in these reports in person, face to face, about one third of the time. And that's one reason why most people leaving care just haven't sat down with a caseworker and worked out a plan. Compared to all the other urgent, immediate problems, the future is low priority.
I had 5 different caseworkers in 6 years. Like, I've heard of kids in care now that have never even met their caseworkers.
In that first year out of care, Alex was couch surfing with the added pressure of looking after a child. Alex is also transgender, which has made it difficult to fit in.
And I've never felt comfortable in my body.
He eventually ended up in state housing.
It's a normal, ordinary family home. The backyard's not very big.
His son is now in state care. Alex is allowed to see him 6 times a year. So only a few years after Alex got out of care, his boy went in. And it shows how these things go in cycles. For Alex, leaving care wasn't as simple as turning 18, getting punched by his girlfriend, and starting a brand new life. I think even now, he's still catching up.
You come so far from where you begin, and you look at yourself now, and it's... You think, how did I get, you know, this lucky in life?
Hack.
Triple J.
21-year-old Alex speaking with James Patil, and we did ask the New South Wales Minister for Family and Community Services, Brad Hazzard, to come on the program and talk about the challenges for young people leaving state care when they turn 18. He declined our invitation. On the text line, the home I was in closed. Someone else says the whole foster care system is failing everyone in it. It's a national disgrace that does not have anyone's interest at the heart of policy making. It's dangerous and damaging. Stefan, you worked in out-of-home care. What did you see?
For me, it's a system that's just so fractured. It just doesn't work at all. The kids come out of there way worse than when they went in. They learn things that they wouldn't have learned elsewhere. For me, the biggest problem is just there's no resources. We're talking about caseworkers. The kids go through even more than 5 sometimes. They never have somebody they can just speak to and get help, like you mentioned before about their parents. They don't have that.
So that's the key thing that could be improved. Do you think that could make a big difference?
It's taxpayers' money. It's getting resources to change it. It's a massive, massive change to overhaul that industry. I think there's something around... I haven't been working in the industry for a while, but I think the figure, I might be wrong, 120,000 kids in New South Wales and out of home care at the moment.
Yeah, right.
I don't think anybody, the general public would have no idea the number's that high.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks for the call, Stefan. Joe, what's been your experience?
Yeah, hi. I work in out-of-home care as well, and we're dealing with, like, the high-end, you know, fully complex trauma, kids that have really suffered terrible abuse when they were, you know, younger and early teens. And basically, these kids are... We are resourced.
Right.
But at the end of the day, we don't just kick these kids out into the street. Like, these kids, you know, they're transitioned to suitable care. You know, if they need to go to disability services, if they need, you know, supported living based on whatever their living skills are, then they go.
Right, so they're not thrown off a cliff at 18, so to speak.
100% no. And some of the kids, you know, they actively actually go out and, you know, they're self-destructive. So they're unfortunately destroying their own... Oh, how would you say it? But they're just destroying their own lives by choosing to, you know, take on drugs, to not get educated.
Yeah, but there's reasons why they might be in that kind of destructive mindset, right?
There's reasons, but at the end of the day, that unfortunately affects when they become adults. It affects when they become 18. So, you know, of course they're going to have employment issues and they're going to have all these issues, but it's not black and white. It's not just about funding. It's not just about... you know, like having adequate places for them when they're 18. It is so much more complex than what people realise.
Oh, I imagine, yeah. Thanks so much for the call, Joe. Kate Aitchison works in this space as well. She's the CEO of the Youth Action Network, which is a peak body representing youth services. Katie, thank you for joining us. What's your perspective on this? What do you think needs to change to make life better for these young people who grow up in this way?
Well, we're spending billions of dollars every year in Australia on supporting young people in out-of-home care. And what we should be doing is seeing that these young people are given the skills that they need to transition into independent living. And what your story really clearly showed is that for most young people who are leaving out-of-home care, they don't have the skills that they need to be able to thrive, and they are falling through the gaps at that 18-year-old point. So they are really falling off a cliff, and you're expecting them to be able to fly without supports. That's not going to happen.
So should care last longer? Should it go till someone's 21 like it is in some parts of the world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Scotland and Ohio and the US have shown that there's really good evidence that says that if you extend it to 21 or even to 25, as we saw in Scotland, that you get better outcomes for these young people. Because you can't expect a young person who's been through quite traumatic experiences and had great barriers in their lives, like we saw with Alex speaking really clearly in your piece, that they need extra support and time to kind of get those skills. And so that they can transition on their own. They know how to handle it when their house floods. I mean, these are complex issues and they need the extra support to do that. And it doesn't always happen by the time they're 18.
So do you think there's any chance of that actually changing here in Australia?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw South Australia saying that they're looking to increase foster care payments for another 3 years to keep young people in foster care placements to 21. And actually, even in New South Wales, the minister has the ability to the discretion to be able to extend the support to those young people up to the age of 25, but it's individual. So yesterday I was in Dubbo and talking to a young person who has extra support up into beyond, she's 19 and she's got it till 21. So she had a good caseworker, she had good people around her and she had the support she needs. Now that needs to happen for all young people in the system.
Yeah, on the text line, one texter is responding to what Joe was saying on the phone. The children aren't self-destructive. Their behaviour is a symptom of the trauma that they've experienced. And Joe was essentially saying that some of these kids aren't taking the opportunities that are offered to them. They're getting mixed up with drugs and that kind of thing. Why do you think that is, and what can be done to, I guess, improve that situation, Katie?
We have a lot of people, young people who are in the system and that are going in with complex needs, and the system is failing to address those needs. So we're seeing them, that trauma that they come in with, that's not being dealt with. They don't have the support. And like the piece said, you know, caseworkers are stretched beyond compare. We're getting more risk of serious harm reports increasing every year. And we need to start doing something with this system that's broken. So we're seeing that the young people are going in and they're coming out sometimes more damaged than they went in. And that's not appropriate, particularly, you know, we're supposed to be keeping young people safe, not harming them.
All right, Katie Aitchison, thank you so much for joining us there. That's Katie, who's the Chief Executive Officer of Youth Action. On the text line, Frankie from Canberra says, "It breaks my heart that these kids don't have an ongoing plan. I get that they've just turned into adults, but shit, I'm 34 and I still call my mum nearly every day."
Hack.
We've all heard the expression that there's plenty of fish in the sea, but a new report says those fish could soon be outnumbered by plastic garbage.
Hack.
It's Triple J.
Do you know how much plastic waste is floating around in the ocean? Well, this might give you an idea. For every metre of coastline in the world, except Antarctica, there's the equivalent of 16 shopping bags full of plastic. That's almost the whole coastline of the world covered in 16 shopping bags full of plastic per metre. You're about to meet a bold young man with a plan to fix it. Boyan Slat is a 22-year-old Dutch guy with a big plan. He started an organisation called the Ocean Cleanup, and he believes he can clean up half the rubbish in the Pacific garbage patch within 10 years. Let's find out more from Boyan himself. Boyan, thanks so much for joining us.
No, thank you for inviting me.
Now, you're a diver. Was there a moment when you were diving that you realised cleaning up the ocean would be your life's work?
I'm not sure whether I was expecting the latter to happen, but certainly when I was 16 years old and I was diving in Greece and I was expecting to see all this beautiful stuff, suddenly I realised I came across more plastic bags than fish. And then I wondered, well, why aren't we cleaning this up? And why isn't anyone working on doing this? And that really got me started on looking whether I can develop this technology.
So how big is the problem? How badly are our oceans littered?
Every year, millions of tons of plastic enters the ocean, and it concentrates in five areas called ocean garbage patches, and the largest one is between Hawaii and California. And there are really three problems with that. First of all, it's an economic problem, so it ends up on shorelines. It ends up in propellers of ships, etc. So like $13 billion annually in terms of damage. Secondly, there are like 100 species that can go extinct because of this. And thirdly, over time, this plastic breaks into smaller and smaller pieces. And then chemicals attach to this plastic. And when fish consume these pieces of plastic, these chemicals then also end up in the food chain. And that's the food chain that includes us humans.
Hack. On Triple J.
You're listening to 22-year-old Dutch inventor Boyan Slat. He's working to clean up a huge pile of rubbish. It's called the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. And in a moment, we'll find out how his solution works and why some scientists don't think it will be successful. First, let's find out more about the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Here's Stephen Stockwell.
These patches of rubbish are known as gyres, where the huge currents outside of each ocean slowly pull in the plastic that's floating out there. There's five patches all up, floating in the most far-out parts of the world's oceans, but the biggest one, about the size of Western Australia, is in the Pacific Ocean, closest to California. It's not like a giant floating landfill, though.
A good metaphor is to think of them like a really thin soup that you hit with a blender. So most of the bits out there are really small.
Chris Wilcox is a principal research scientist for the CSIRO, working in the Marine and Atmospheric Research Unit. He's actually been out to study the gyre in the Atlantic.
The highest concentration there was about 600,000 items per square kilometre. So that's a lot, but it's important to keep in mind that most of those items are smaller than a pinhead.
In total, there's about 1 million tonnes of plastic floating around in the five big gyres, which comes from you and me, although countries with a budding consumer culture and poor waste disposal do contribute slightly more.
So that's going to be China, the Philippines, Indonesia, India, Bangladesh, some of these really populous kind of middle-income countries. But that said, you know, Australia seems to make a contribution also.
Because these patches sit in international waters, it's hard to get someone to take responsibility for cleaning them up.
This is what researchers often call a transboundary problem, right? The stuff crosses national boundaries, and it's not really clear how to address these sorts of environmental problems.
Chris was involved in some research last year that found about 8 million tonnes of plastic ends up in our oceans each year. The gyres only hold about 1 million tonnes total, so that means the majority of this rubbish is causing problems much closer to shore.
Most of what we put in the ocean gets washed back on shore relatively close to where it goes in the ocean, or it's in the coastal margin, you know, kind of around the sources. You know, if you pick a city like Sydney, you can tell how far you are away from the city by how much plastic you find on the coastline or in the ocean, and that's where all the biodiversity is in these coastal margins.
Hack with Tom Tilley, Triple J.
Chris Wilcox from the CSIRO speaking to Stephen Stockwell on the text line. F, yes, such a good topic to address. We need to make change. Billy from Newcastle. All right, well, let's see how the 22-year-old Dutch inventor Boyan Slat is planning to clean up the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Boyan, tell us, how does your solution work?
Sure. So in the past, people proposed to clean up this mess using vessels and nets that would sort of go out and start fishing for plastic. But the thing is that these garbage patches are quite big. So the plastic is spread out over a vast area. So if you were to go out there with vessels and nets, it would take quite a long time, about 79,000 years. So I didn't consider that to be feasible. So then I thought, well, these ocean currents, garbage patches, they rotate, so the current pushes this plastic around. So then I thought, well, can't we use that to our advantage? Because why would you move through the oceans if the oceans can also move through you? And what I then envisioned was this array of very long floating barriers attached to the seabed, which would allow these natural ocean currents to bring the plastic towards it, and then allowing it to let the ocean concentrate this plastic before we then physically take it out of the ocean. And now we've been able to calculate that with 100 kilometers of such systems deployed for 10 years, we can clean up half this Great Pacific Garbage Patch.
Wow, that's huge. So how far are you in implementing that plan?
Well, so over the past 2 years, we focused on two things. One is really understanding the problem. So, for example, last year we crossed this area with 30 vessels at the same time to really map it, to understand how much is out there. We supplemented that with another reconnaissance mission last month when we had this big military aircraft, which we flew across the garbage patch to also quantify these largest objects, like up to 10 meters in diameter, so really big stuff. And on the other side, we, of course, did a lot of experiments, did a lot of tests with this, first in scale model facilities, and we even deployed a 100-meter-long prototype in the North Sea off the coast of Europe in June this year. And all that combined should now put us on track to deploy the first real operational ocean cleanup system in the ocean in the second half of next year.
Wow, it's a huge undertaking, especially considering you're 22 years old. It's incredible. How much is this going to cost, and how have you been able to get the finance?
Actually, we started all this with crowdfunding. So back in 2014, we raised about 2.2 million US dollars to be able to get started, which is great. But then we obviously had to transition to going from this large group of small funders to a small group of large funders. We continue to be financed through a combination of philanthropists and corporate sponsorships.
Are there any potential problems with your system? I mean, potentially with Sea Life getting caught up in your nets or any other potentially even unforeseen problems that could result from your technology?
Well, so we don't actually use nets. All we do is we use non-permeable screens, basically. So it's kind of like a 2-meter deep curtain in a way. So what happens is that the current flows underneath this, and that takes away all the neutrally buoyant sea life, while the positively buoyant, so the floating plastic, remains in front of it. So that way, we can actually separate the two before it gets to any collection system. Certainly, what we are doing, you know, it has never been done before. So, of course, there are technological risks, but we're confident that by doing all these tests and by having this great team of engineers, that we can actually solve it and make it happen.
And what is it like for you, Boyan, on a personal level, to be working on such a unique, such a huge project at such a young age? I mean, you sound confident. You sound like you take all this in your stride, but it's a huge deal. You've received the UN's highest environmental accolade, Champion of the Earth. How do you feel about what you've achieved so far?
I think I can only be truly satisfied once the ocean is clean again.
Lots of people your age are probably drunk in a uni bar somewhere right now. Do you still lead a normal 22-year-old life outside of this huge project?
I would say a few days a year. usually I don't really have time for that.
Boyan, fascinating to speak to you. Thanks so much for joining us on Hack, and congratulations on all your work so far.
Well, thank you.
Hack on Triple J.
That's Boyan Slat, 22-year-old Dutch inventor, CEO of the Ocean Cleanup. Ellie Ryan on our Facebook page says, "This guy's a bloody genius. Support his work and help clean up our oceans. It's all our responsibility." So it's a really interesting and exciting project. Let's find out if it is going to work. Denise Hardesty is a research scientist at the CSIRO's Oceans and Atmosphere Department. Denise, you have some serious reservations about this project. What are they?
Well, I do, and I think those reservations are really numerous, and it's probably not only me, or I certainly know that it's not only me who has those sorts of concerns. You know, one thing is that this approach, this technological solution, is something that's designed to take place very far away, very remote. What happens when there's problems and the thing breaks up and has mechanical issues and other sorts of problems that happen with a huge technological device, and it's so far away that you actually can't get out there to fix it, to treat it, and it becomes the marine debris that it's actually designed to clean up. You know, I mean, it's a great idea, I'm really on board with the enthusiasm, but, you know, this sort of approach, it's not very likely to actually resolve the issue. You know,
is that the only problem that you're worried about, the machinery breaking down out in the middle of the ocean, or are there other concerns?
No, I mean, I think there are numerous concerns about a technological solution. One, it's really remote, and frankly, it's not where most of our rubbish, where most of the plastic, most of the debris that's in the ocean, it's simply not addressing the problem where it's the most important, you know, and that would be on the coastline, in the nearshore environment, near our cities.
Can you do both, though? Can you work on that those problems closer to the ocean, closer to our river mouths, but also clean up these massive, big, you know, garbage patches out in the far ocean?
Well, I think that the technological solution that Boyan is proposing isn't super likely to be successful, and not within the time frame. I think there are numerous potential issues with it. So, you know, while I certainly hope that I'm wrong, it would be great to go out there and clean up the oceans. It's just not that simple and straightforward. You know, most of the stuff isn't actually at the ocean. It's more these little tiny particles by the time you get out into these gyres, out into these very remote areas. And it's also not where the biodiversity is. It's not where the impact is really going to, you know, be seen. And there's all these positions that he mentions about, I don't know if he's talked about them in this interview, but, you know, where he's mentioned it's, you know, you're going to be able to recycle these plastics. Well,
yeah,
actually, they're going to be biofoul. There's
pretty hard out there, that's for sure. Denise Hardesty from CSIRO, great to speak to there. Linda Mariano, what's up next?
Mate, heaps of Australian music for Oz Music Month.
Oh, awesome. All right, catch you later.